This is Continental Media 0401. I'm Glenn Hauser with the supplemental program The World of Radio, produced in late January. However, if you're hearing this on a shortwave station which carries World of Radio, that's because this week Continental Media is substituting for WOR. Otherwise, this program is available on the web via dxing.com and worldofradio.com and SIU Edwardsville Web Radio, and we hope soon again on Radio for Peace International. Continental Media is about media around the American continent, not necessarily shortwave, but we begin with some shortwave items, or at least shortwave-related. There's a new member of the Broadcasting Board of Governors appointed by Acting President Bush, Veronique Rodman. She's a PR specialist and former TV producer. The BBG is supposedly bipartisan, a 9-member board supervising all U.S. non-military international broadcasting. Bush nominated Rodman on October 24th and gave her a recess appointment on December 26th. I should explain that a recess appointment means that she can go ahead and start serving without being confirmed by Congress for a specified period of time. Then she must be or be reappointed. As we read more about her background, it's becoming clear that to get an appointment by President Bush, you must share his far-right ideology. It says Rodman is Director of Public Affairs at the American Enterprise Institute for Public Policy Research, that Washington-based think tank. Before that, in 1999, when she joined it, she worked for many years in broadcasting as producer of ABC's This Week with David Brinkley and a television news consultant who helped launch Fox News Sunday. She was also vice president for the Cosmetic, Toiletries, and Fragrance Association Foundation. Even though I'm an American, I managed to get a copy of the 2004 calendar of The Voice of America. It's really a nice one, featuring some great art from art museums around the country. However, even it is controversial. Story in the Washington Post, calendar stirs anger of some VOA staffers. This was in Al Kamen's In the Loop column, December 19th. African Americans at VOA are seething over the 2004 calendar, which features photos of famous American art. January has a painting by 19th century artist William Sidney Mount called The Musicians, a group of whites playing music while a young black man listens outside. But VOA spokesman Joe Connell said the idea was to try to pick as diverse a group of artists as possible and to show the American experience, warts and all. The VOA should not be trying to censor ourselves. Meanwhile, there's chatter that the agency, which has long had mostly white reporters, is making an effort to make sure its newsroom looks very diversified. So when tourists pass by the glass windows and peer into the new newsroom in a few months, they're going to see lots of minorities in desks near the windows, even if those staffers work in sections that are located some distance away. Cynics are calling it window dressing. Not so, O'Connell says. VOA is already diverse, and we don't have to make it up. The placement of African and East Asia Pacific Division staffers is intended to break down historic barriers between the newsroom and the language services and to expand content to those regions. Surfing the Internet, John Filiozzi found some interesting material about Radio Marti. He says, one has to ask, in light of plummeting audience numbers, why Radio Marti remains so well-funded, or even in existence while the VOA has had to drastically cut back even its demonstrably successful services, such as VOA Worldwide English and many language services. There was testimony by Philip Peters, VP of the Lexington Institute, before the Subcommittee on International Operations and Human Rights of the House International Relations Committee. More than a sesquiannear ago, June 6, 2002, about Radio Marti's shrinking audience and what to do about it. We'll have a link to the entire thing, and some excerpts appear from it in DX Listening Digest 4001. Consult the summary for this Continental Media 0401 for references like this. Among the recommendations, which I'll just summarize, terminate TV Marti in light of its failure to establish an audience. Move the Radio Marti newsroom and the office of Cuba Broadcasting HQ back to Washington, retaining a news bureau in Miami. Overhaul Radio Marti's newsroom management. Demand immediate implementation of basic reforms, such as a program log, using focus group research, and termination of broadcasters who fail to adhere to Radio Marti's standards of professionalism and fairness. Then restore Radio Marti's research department, abolished in 1996, use independent monitors, increase congressional oversight, and broaden programming horizons. Meanwhile, in Cuba itself, things are getting worse, if that's possible. From La Nueva Cuba, January 13th, via Oscar de Céspedes, that's an exile organization, Amnesty International has expressed concern at the impact on freedom of expression and info of Cuba's new law restricting Internet access. Amnesty says the new measures, which limit and impede unofficial Internet use, constitute yet another attempt to cut off Cubans' access to alternative views and a space for discussing them. This step, on top of last year's prosecution of 75 activists for peacefully expressing their views, gives the authorities another mechanism for repressing dissent and punishing critics. The new law, which came into effect on 10 January, limits Internet access to those such as officially recognized businesses and government offices with special telephone accounts payable in U.S. dollars. This prevents ordinary Cuban people from accessing the service. Amnesty International fears the new measures are intended to prevent human rights monitoring by restricting the flow of information out of Cuba. The authorities must do away with illegitimate curbs on freedom of expression and information and must bring their legislation into line with international human rights standards once and for all, says Amnesty International. Some background, the vast majority of Cuba's media are state-owned and controlled. Cubans' access to foreign media is limited. However, Cuban government sources have reportedly indicated they believe up to 40,000 Cubans have unofficial access to the Internet. The original story in Spanish went into more detail. Also from CubaNet, there was a report on January 16th that Cuba has stepped up jamming of Radio Marti and other outside broadcasts. However, it did not, I must say, cite any evidence. A separate story on January 16th about a satellite TV antenna being confiscated, owned by an individual. Apparently this is happening a lot. They were turned in, of course, by members of the Neighborhood Spy Group Committees for the Defense of the Revolution. There's a crackdown on people trying to get television from outside sources that are not approved. On UT Saturday, January 17th at 06:45, I came upon Radio Havana, Cuba, with a montage of voices from the present, mixed with some from the Vietnam era, making acute political points. Among those I recognized were Senator Wayne Morse, Carol Moseley Braun, RFK, Noam Chomsky. It's the kind of production Radio Havana is not known for, requiring an extensive sound library, a lot of research, and editing. Still, I was surprised to hear when it ended at 06:52 that this had been Making Contact from the National Radio Project, to be continued tomorrow. As far as I know, it's not on the RHC program schedule, so it may have been a special booking, but listeners to Radio for Peace International should be familiar with the program Making Contact. So has it found a new shortwave home? Well, the two Havana frequencies at that time, subject to the usual technical problems, 9550 and 9820. Michael Seaman in Florida doesn't care for the program, thinks it's pro-communist, but says that RHC has been running Making Contact for at least a year, not a regular feature, but something they use when people are on vacation or out covering an event. Making Contact is also in a number of community and public radio stations in the U.S. You can find all about when it is webcast at publicradiofan.com. From the Save RFPI website, here's a New Year's letter to the Council of the University for Peace. My name is Stephen Tingley, a former RFPI volunteer, January to March 2000. This letter I email to Council members. I'm writing to express my extreme disappointment and sadness with what you have done for Radio for Peace near Ciudad Colón. I volunteered at the station for 3 months for credit for graduate school at Ohio University. And the experience was beautiful, enriching, and most importantly, educational. Your ill-informed, inappropriate actions have hurt a lot of people, listeners of the station, those who operated it, and also the people of Ciudad Colón, who benefited from the foreign volunteers, have all been affected by your cold, heartless actions. But my anger is also with the fact that you've taken away a great center of learning for countless potential volunteers. Radio for Peace gave many volunteers, including myself, hands-on experience with all aspects of radio, including writing, editing, and production. It's helped me tremendously in my career and in life. RFPI was also a strong beacon of justice, peace, and truth. It was an asset to the University for Peace, and the fact that you shut it down is a clear sign of your ignorance and your weak will to stand up and do what is right. Shame on all of you. May your new year, 2004, be full of bad karma from your ruthless fascist actions. Sincerely, Stephen M. Tingley. Well, from the January-February issue of Vista from RFPI, there's good news, although they're still off the air. They were getting closer to resuming streaming audio on the Internet. And furthermore, RFPI is working on a study partnership with the San Jose-based Institute for Central American Development Studies, that's Central America's leading language institute. Interested participants will enroll in a month-long course combining the concept of peace journalism with Spanish language studies. It brings together activists who wish to have a better understanding of media and practicing journalists who wish to learn alternative reporting skills. Both partners are very excited about the new program, which will continue the work of previous IPC courses. Proceeds will assist in the upkeep of Radio for Peace International. Courses are set to begin in March. More information at these websites, www.ipccr.org and www.icadscr.com. Now's a good time to mention that this program, Continent of Media, is sponsored by Radio for Peace International and by Universal Radio, offering quality amateur and shortwave radio equipment since 1942. For a catalog, call them toll-free at 1-800-431-3939 or visit www.universal-radio.com. We're in the midst of Continent Media 0401. Our address, if you have comments or information to contribute, P.O. Box 1684, ENID OK 73702, USA. Or WGHAUSER at yahoo.com. If you've not yet seen it, I'd like to call your attention to a particular page on the website of one of our other outlets, WWCR, which I think is fair to say the most successful of the U.S. commercial shortwave stations, an inside look at how it works, and even a 7-minute video tour, www.wwcr.com/wwcr_sales_information.html. I'd also like to call your attention to a program on WBCQ, which you might otherwise miss, since the ones preceding and following it are rather despicable. UT Tuesdays at 0200 to 0300 on 7415 is Secular Bible Study. It's a rather low-key but thoroughgoing analysis of the Bible based on the King James Version, but comparing it to other versions and to various books which have studied the Bible. The speaker is identified as Dr. Elliot Lesser in Phoenix, Arizona, and he has a book called The Gospels and Acts, Questions and Problems. This is entirely from a secular, objective point of view, something you're not likely to hear on other U.S. shortwave radio programs. On the shortwave programs group, a thread titled Religion for Adults, Joel Rubin recommends another program of interest, Equal Time for Free Thought, not on shortwave, but it is on WBAI New York, which is webcast. It's Sundays at 23:30 until midnight UT, that is 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time. On the NRC AM list, this commentary by Scott Feibusch of Northeast Radio Watch. I'll say this for NPR versus Fox News or CNN or any other broadcast news outlet. National Public Radio is at least sufficiently aware of its own potential for bias that it employs an ombudsman to keep an eye out for those issues. He has issues of his own, to be sure, but you'll never see the sort of internal criticism of Fox News or of CNN that NPR's ombudsman offers of that network's operations, including a recent column strongly criticizing the practice of NPR reporters appearing as analysts on cable news channels. We'll include a link to that. Scott goes on, when I want to hear truly slanted news, my preference is for the stuff on American Family Radio, or to a lesser extent, the USA Radio Network. No pretensions to fair and balanced on those, and I'd contend that AFR in particular enjoys a massive federal subsidy in the form of the thousands of licenses it's been granted around the country without even being required to have a local studio presence, as well as in the tax-exempt status it enjoys, which in effect amounts to an involuntary subsidy of AFA by every American taxpayer. NPR, at least, owns no radio stations outright, which makes it at least somewhat responsible to the hundreds of local licensees who support its programming and provide a strong local component to accompany NPR's national programming. If NPR has strayed anywhere from its mission, I contend it's here. It was never intended to be such a centralized program service, but rather a clearinghouse for local stations to exchange programming. Too many NPR stations these days fill their schedules with national content to the exclusion of the local programming that should be at the heart of their mission. There's a public radio station which does have local programming, but not for long, I suppose. From the Southwest Journal, meaning Southwest Minneapolis, via Mike Cooper, Lindale resident Wendy Perrine, also known as Wendy Wild, does a radio talk show that is not conservative, an alternative to radio trash talk. She's the new host of The High Ground, 1 to 3 p.m. on WMNN AM 1330, discussing Minnesota news with guests and audience callers. Little did she know, I suppose, that a couple of weeks later, WMNN would again be in the news because its owner, Minnesota Public Radio, decided to sell it for several million dollars to a commercial interest in order, they say, to secure the future financially of its remaining stations. Here's another public radio station doing something unique and daring right here in Oklahoma. It's KCSC. In January, they started a weekday poetry segment at 5.06 p.m. Central Time. Gordon McDougall, director of the drama department at the University of Oklahoma, has developed it called Poem for Today. Notes from literary, dramatic, and musical history for that day's date, and a short poem as well. That's 2306 UT, and yes, KCSC is webcast. It's a joint production with another Oklahoma station webcast, but I don't know what time, KGOU at OU in Norman. Perhaps you've heard my previous reports that there's a brand new X-band station right here in Enid, Oklahoma, KMMZ 1640. It's an all-comedy radio format. In fact, that's the name of the network originating in Los Angeles. I've been disappointed that there have been not many DX reports of it from abroad, probably because of its peculiar directional pattern designed to serve Oklahoma City and Enid, which means not much signal goes out to the northeast or the southwest, where South Pacific or European DXers might hear it. For everyone who's not yet heard it, here's an ID I just recorded.
KMMZ, Enid, Oklahoma City, AM 1640 is all comedy radio.
It's all about fun.
It's all about funny.
And it's about time.
This is the All Comedy Radio Network.
Broadcasting from the main vein of comedy on the Sunset Strip in Hollywood.
Finally, your radio has a laugh button.
Yeah, he's got a message, but
it ain't in a bottle.
George Carlin on the All Comedy Radio Network.
What we have now is a completely neurotic population obsessed with security and safety and crime and drugs and cleanliness and hygiene and germs.
You can read all about KMMZ at my particular webpage, worldofradio.com, /enid.html, and on the same page about the peculiar case of our low-power TV station, KXOK. Here's another contender for the title World's Oldest Radio Station you may not have heard of before, KUOA in Arkansas. Radio began when Marconi transmitted the first radio signals over one sesquimile in Italy in 1895. Ethel Simpson, head of archive and manuscripts at the University of Arkansas, was able to confirm for the Herald Leader, where this story appeared, that 2 years later in 1897, electrical engineering professor William Gladson did build an experimental wireless transmitter. It was then at John Brown University. Archivist Heather Brewer unearthed a paper written in 1935 by a student Lester C. Harlow, citing the Federal Radio Commission and FCC, tracing KUOA's history as far back as 1901, verifying documentation from U of A, and claims of articles in Popular Communications and recently on AWR Wavescan. From the results of Gladstone's work, in 1900 a wireless telegraph station was installed on the U of A Fayetteville campus. Gladstone was not known for radio, but for his early work with X-rays. He operated the first X-ray machine in Arkansas, and for designing the state's first electric chair. After radio stations, or as they were then called, land stations, became regulated in 1912, the U of A station was granted the call sign 5YM. Like most amateur and commercial radio stations during World War I, it was closed in 1917. President Wilson ordered the airwaves silent. But it came back in 1919, and the story continues. One of the oldest to one of the newest. Via Hardcore DX, Paul McDonough in Massachusetts says in the Boston Globe, December 19th, there's an article about a new station on 540 kilohertz to be called Radio Log, that's L-O-G, or just R-Log for short. It'll be on the air by the end of December, programmed by 12 to 18-year-old girls for the same audience. It's partially to fight back against the misogyny in hip-hop and rap music. The name of the station comes from an alternative school in Dorchester called the Log School. The studios will be on the fourth floor of St. Mary's and Infants Center in Dorchester, the transmitter on the roof of that building. One of the major backers is Mayor Menino of Boston, who thought it was a great idea when it was presented to him. So it can't be that illegal. Keep your DX ears open on 540, since I'm sure the station will be low power. Terry Kruger in Florida reports there's a new NOAA weather station on the West Coast. According to the NOAA website and local media, it'll have greater range than previous ones, about 70 miles offshore on 162.450 megahertz. It's on a tower in Largo, apparently. In addition to the usual weather information, it will carry broadcasts from the National Fisheries Service about areas closed to fishing, regulations, licensing, or info, such as the location of red tide outbreaks. For an overview of what you can hear and see on radio and TV in Freeport, Grand Bahama Island, check DX Listening Digest 4006, where we reprint Ken Zeke's reports for the Michigan area radio enthusiasts from his recent visit to Freeport. AM and FM band scans, television too, and even check the aeronautical bands. And here's something especially strange. One of the only really active ranges above 30 megahertz was wireless phones from 950 to 1100 megahertz with lots of discrete wideband FM signals heard for the duration of a phone conversation, popping up like targets in a whack-a-mole game. Nobody apparently uses landline phones, and the signals were in the clear, but using wideband FM rather than narrow, and not functioning, of course, as cell phones usually do, changing frequencies. He also says it's very weird that housekeeping at the Island Seas Resort used wideband FM on TV Channel 8 for its communications. From Greg Hardison in Los Angeles, here's part of his broadcast band update for January. Patrolling the border. The Mexican radio pest in Tecate on 560 AM has changed call to XEPE. I do believe they've reduced power a bit. The signal is notably weaker in the San Fernando Valley at night and in Orange County in the daytime, since about January 8th. This may be in response to or in ignorance of a joint interference complaint filed by Clear Channel's KFYI 550 in Phoenix and KBLU 560 in Yuma, a scant 120 miles away. Also getting in on that complaint were Buck Owens' KUZZ 550 in Bakersfield and Disney's KSFO 560 in San Francisco. He says certainly the two 560s have the most legitimate complaints. The others are laboring from sour grapes, in my opinion. Not too far away, rumor has it that two new XEs are being built in Rosarito near Tijuana. One supposedly is set to air on 780 a.m., the other at 920. Both seem unlikely to me, as 780 would be short space to Tijuana's XESPN on 800. The 920 deal seems downright impossible, as a full-time licensed station operates in Ensenada, less than 50 air miles away. Mexico has in the past issued many ghost permits for stations never built, primarily to protect broadcast allocations from encroaching U.S. stations. 780 could possibly host such a low-powered U.S. facility in northern San Diego County. Considering anything similar on 920 would be downright ludicrous, given not only Ensenada but San Diego's own KECR, firmly placed at 910 a.m. with Family Radio. Although its political and cultural ties are closer to Europe, Greenland is usually grouped geographically with North America. Dave Koenig, who runs intervalsignalsonline.com, says the whaleboat Sonia Drags Whale is the title of the interval signal used by Radio Greenland. This elusive melody is now available on low-powered medium wave and FM and at his website. You'll hear a brief announcement in Danish, news jingle, time check, ID, and sign-off announcement in Greenlandic, and the national anthem.
Tirsdagens aftenradioavis, vi er tilbage i morgen tidligt på Genhør.
Glasnat Radioa. Damals da Oslo med Marslungund om det. Januar på Oslo 20. Asgard Tinoput. Der mange nærmest var putt. Hermed afslutter vi dagens udsendelser for i dag, tirsdag den 20. januar. Og vi ønsker jer godnat. Der må se sin klare.
National Anthem of Greenland. Paul David sends an item from the Blind News mailing list that descriptive video is just starting up in Canada. There's a company in Vancouver doing it on the secondary audio program. So far, only a few Canadian shows are being described, including Cold Squad and The 11th Hour, but more are expected. We know this is also being done on certain PBS programs in the U.S., but is there any regular or any use at all of DVS on the U.S. commercial TV networks? If so, it's a well-kept secret, lacking any promotion, and none that I can pick up in Oklahoma, on the air or cable. Greg Hardison replies, the Turner Nets are running descriptive video on some but not all programs. This usually shows up on Turner Classic Movies and TNT. To read much more about this and all the other stories we've mentioned, check the summary for this continent of media at worldofradio.com. That's COM0401. Glenn Hauser, thanks for listening and hoping you'll also hear my weekly program, World of Radio.